listening to A Lump in the Road. This is the diary of my sister, cancer, and me.
It's the 10th of December, and it's been 3 weeks almost since we last recorded. Now, there has been a couple of reasons for that that we'll talk about later on in our chat. But I think what we want to start with, we did mention a couple of weeks ago that you might do some voice notes, and I might do some voice notes as we're actually going through this experience in between chatting with each other. And I think you made one, Larissa, on the 24th. The last time we spoke and recorded was Monday the 21st, and you were awaiting results of the MRI scan, weren't you?
So I have just had a call from the breast unit to say that I am to go in tomorrow at 12:15 for the results of my MRI scan. And I imagine at that point a discussion about my treatment plan. I feel incredibly nervous, in fact, sick with anxiety. I am going out for dinner tonight with my work colleagues, my old work colleagues. So I think a good bit of distraction therapy will certainly help. But I feel really nervous, really anxious. I can't help but wonder, what if the cancer is bigger than they thought by a huge degree? What if it has spread? What if it's in my lymph nodes? What if it's all so much worse than I originally thought? Just feel really down. Really down and a bit desperate, really. Don't know what to do with myself for the next couple of hours. Feel very tense. I'd quite like to get into bed and cuddle up with some dogs and get warm and pretend it's not happening. Doesn't really help the fact it's the most awful rainy day. Literally like the heavens have opened, which is so depressing. Just feel a bit rubbish. And yeah, don't really know what to do with myself. I might go and make a cup of tea. Then I might actually put something really warm on, a big warm jumper and some gloves and socks, and actually get back into bed for a bit. Nothing wrong with that, is there?
So, gosh, you do sound so sad. And can I just answer your rhetorical question? Is there ever a time when you shouldn't get back into your dramas and then be covered in dogs? Because for me, that's an all type of mood situation. It's like eating. Eat when you're happy, eat when you're sad, eat when you're bored. For me, it's like any time, but I get it.
So there was nothing wrong with that, because that is basically what I did.
Excellent.
Yeah, I did get back into bed.
But on a serious note, it made me sad to listen to that, and yeah. I wanted to come and cuddle you when I heard it.
Yeah, I remember now. I mean, it feels like 4 months ago, actually, but it was only a week last Friday, last Thursday. I look back on that even now, only days later, and I'd forgotten how very, very sad I was at the time, and utterly distraught, really, because when you're going through this and you are waiting for a full diagnosis, which I was, and then I imagine going into the next bit where you are after surgery waiting for histology, and then you get to the point where your treatment is finished and you're then waiting for a yearly update and all these things, assuming that you're lucky enough to get to the waiting for a yearly update part. It is absolutely terrifying. That fear of the unknown is so, so scary. It's beyond isolating.
And not having an expert at, you know, literally there to ask anything you want to all the time must be very, very hard, because I know that you like to be in control. And, you know, when you're sitting there and you can't control your feelings and you can't do anything about it, it feels desperate, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah. It really does.
So you had the MRI results. You got the call that week, and you went in on the 25th, I believe, to get your
Friday.
Results. Okay.
Yes.
So tell us about that day.
So I met with the oncoplastic surgeon that day. He was doing the appointment, and fortunately for me, the MRI scan with the contrast dye said exactly the same thing as the mammogram and the ultrasound, which is that the tumour is small, I think they are now saying it's between 1.6 centimetres and 1.8. That's their best guess. Although it still does feel slightly larger than that. Every time they touch me, they acknowledge that it feels slightly larger than that.
MRI scans are pretty accurate, aren't they?
They are. I mean, I've interrogated the... And when I say interrogated, I don't mean that sound quite...
No, I actually think you've used the correct word.
To be fair, I probably did. I asked...
Kindly interrogated.
Yeah. I asked quite forcefully why this could be. Why were those three imaging pieces of equipment showing one thing, and yet when they were feeling it, it felt slightly different? But it doesn't happen very often that is the case. It is an anomaly, so this is a bit unlucky for me, but it's happening. And what he is basically saying, what my surgeon is saying, is that they have to take the imaging as the correct version of things, because all three of the imaging technologies are saying the same thing.
Okay, so this is positive.
It is positive.
When we're talking grades, because I know people keep saying to me, oh, what grade is it? What grade is it? And actually, we've got an answer to that now, haven't we?
Yeah, we kind of did have an answer to that before. I don't know whether I've mentioned it or whether we've even talked about it, but...
I think we were waiting for absolute confirmation of the size, weren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, they think it's grade one. Yeah. So this is... assuming all of this is accurate, okay, yeah, and assuming they don't go into surgery and something else is revealed and it's very different, but what they are saying is that at the moment it looks like it's grade one. So under the microscope, so the grading is basically how the cells are acting, okay? So you have grades 1, 2, and 3, as far as I'm aware, and I'm not a medic, so if that isn't quite accurate, please...
I'm sure you will be by the end of the process.
So 1 to 3, mine is grade 1, and that means that the cells are behaving relatively normally. So they look, if you put them side by side with a normal cell, they look very similar. So they're not too erratic. I've got this image in my head of like frenetic energy for like grade 3, and then a slightly less frenetic energy for grade 2, and then virtually sleepy for grade 1.
A nice, sleepy cell.
What you need is a nice, a nice sleepy cell. Yeah.
Yeah.
So under the microscope, according to the biopsy, it was looking like a nice grade 1 tumour. Mm-hmm. And the stage is different from the grade. So the stage relates to the size and if it has spread to other parts of your body. So
maybe that's what I mean then, stage, if we've talked about grades.
Well,
before.
Maybe we've talked about both. I don't know. But the stage is related to size and whether it's spread. So they're currently saying that it's stage 1, which mm-hmm. means that it's still very much in the area it started, and they don't think it has spread to my lymph nodes. So you know what, keep your fingers crossed that it remains stage 1 and grade 1, and you know, it's easy peasy.
Okay, now when we did chat that last time on the 21st, and then obviously you've had those results on the 25th, we were kind of expecting a plan to be in place within a 3-week period, weren't we?
Yeah.
And it's kind of almost coming to that. And obviously, there's been quite a few other bits and bobs going on within the last couple of weeks.
Sorry, can I just say one more thing about the results part of it? Because also at that appointment, I was expecting to get the results of the HER2 status.
That's right. The thing that we had to retest because it was coming back
equivocal.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's on a scale of 1, 2, or 3. And 3 is aggressive. And 1 is 3 means it's positive, HER2 positive. 2 is equivocal and 1 is negative.
And you had it at 2.
I had it at 2. So it had to go somewhere else to be retested, yeah. And at that appointment, it wasn't back, although they were hoping it would be. Now, if that comes back as HER2 positive, that will be an automatic straight into chemotherapy situation. Not immediately as in now, mm-hmm. but that will definitely be part of the treatment plan. But, you know, at this point, they weren't, that they didn't have that result. So
yeah,
we couldn't say for sure.
Okay. So because it's all been a bit all over the place, it's quite hard to remember the chronology, isn't it, of it? But I know that at that point, we were talking about what types of surgery were going to be on offer, because that was what we were discussing the yes. night you had that appointment.
Yes.
So they said that actually we think a January surgery, these are the yeah. potential options.
Yeah. So basically the surgeon said to me that we were looking at the end of January for the surgery part of the treatment to happen. And he then talked me through what my options were. I'm in the very fortunate position that there are options.
Yeah.
And then he said to me, so I'll talk you through what they are in a second, but he basically left that information with me to think about in between then and my next appointment.
Which I've already had.
Yeah. So I'll try and do it in the order in which it sort of happened to me, really, so that you can hopefully follow my thought process and the emotions that went with it, because maybe they will be useful for somebody else, I don't know. But basically, the first option for me, as he told me on the 25th, is a mastectomy, so a full mastectomy with or without reconstruction, either in the moment or at a later date. Then there were three different types of lumpectomy that I could have. So the first one was a straightforward lumpectomy, so where my cancer is, it's just to the inside of my nipple. A lot of these cancers tend to be on the outside, so, you know, on the bulbous part of your breast. And as we get older, that central bit gets flatter and flatter, I suppose. So mine is in the sort of more flat part of my breast. And because I am an A cup with obviously quite small breasts, the basic lumpectomy would leave a very large concave dip in my breast area, so chest stroke breast area. Mm-hmm. But it would be a straightforward surgery, literally half an hour, get the cancer, get the margin that they need to take around it, and off we pop, stitch it all back together, and job done. The second surgery is also, these are all variations of lumpectomies, by the way. So the second surgery was also a lumpectomy, but it basically involved cutting around my nipple and opening up the breast area via that type of incision. And once they had taken the cancer out on the margin, literally scooping together. Now, I imagined it to be
an ice cream scoop.
Not quite ice cream scoop. You know when you're on the beach playing with your kids and you use two hands rather than a bucket and a spade to push the sandcastle together. So in my head, there's this guy who's going to be pushing this mound of sand together so that it creates a breast shape, but it's not particularly strategic surgery. It's literally what it says, I think.
Yeah.
Gathering sand together with both hands, making a small point.
So we're not talking cosmetic surgery here, are we?
No, these are not. No, but the second option is an advance on the first, because obviously that concave hole wouldn't be there. But with the second option, as with the first, actually, it would leave me with a much smaller breast. So potentially I would have to wear a prosthesis, as well as obviously having had the surgery trauma.
And that wouldn't work for you, would it?
Not really.
You don't like a padded bra.
No, I don't like a padded bra.
You quite like small boobs, don't you?
I do, yeah.
You do.
I like the natural feel as well.
That teardrop kind of look?
Yeah.
Well, that's what you are, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I am.
You like that.
Yes, I do. So it wouldn't really look like that. And the other thing to make a note of is that whenever you have a lumpectomy, you may have radiotherapy as well, to kill everything that may exist at a very local level.
That can be quite harsh on the actual skin and everything.
It can, but a friend of mine who has been through this, who has been the most amount of support, really tremendous, has said to me that actually, compared to all the other bits, that's a walk in the park. So don't worry about the radiotherapy, was how she described it. She was like, just don't even think about it. It will happen if you have the lumpectomy. So that is the second option of the lumpectomies. But again, the radiotherapy makes, the reason why I'm telling you this is that the radiotherapy makes your breast shrink. So not only would it still be deformed looking, but it would be shrunk as well. So it would all be a bit odd still.
Yeah.
And then the third option, which immediately appealed to me, actually, once he'd talked me through it, is basically what is called, it's a partial breast reconstruction using a chest wall perforator flap.
Okay, so that's Why do they always have to call it something that makes you go, ooh?
Oh, the word flap.
I know.
It was just like, oh, what could that mean?
So it's a lick cap, isn't it? Is
lick cap, lie cap, lick cap, whatever.
Okay, sounds like a cat treat to me, but anyway.
I'm sure it is not.
I'm sure it's
a cat treat. No kind of
full
treat.
Full disclosure, there are no cat treats involved in this, or cat flaps. I think it's the word
cat flap. Flap.
There we go, it's the flap that's made me think like that.
That's exactly what it will be. But yeah, no cats, no... Well, there are flaps, yeah, but no cat flaps.
Okay.
Anyway, so I think from now on, actually, we should call it the cat flap surgery.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So that's basically where they make an incision underneath your breast that goes out towards the underneath of your armpit. So it kind of goes from underneath your breast in the middle all the way up towards your armpit and then into your armpit and potentially into your back. Ooh. And what they do then is, so from the front, you will never be able to tell that you have had cancer removed and then reconstructive surgery. So basically they open up the breast from that position and they then use the tissue and fat from underneath your arm and down the side of your body and into your back.
I've already thought of an issue here. There is no fat on you right now, so we are. Do I have to feed you up over Christmas?
I've been eating as many dairy milks as I possibly
Maybe
can.
Maybe we could have a double surgery. Take some of my nice tummy fat. It's lovely and juicy.
You could be my donor.
If only. Sorry, I know that I shouldn't say that, but
no, it's fine.
We will fatten you up then, like a turkey before Christmas.
Lovely. I feel really pleased and delighted at that. So basically, they take the tissue, fat, and various bits and bobs from underneath your arm and into your back. And once they have removed the cancer with the margin, they use all of that to repack your breast and hopefully make it look as similar to the existing breast as possible. Although I did think of something quite funny, actually, when he was talking to me about this the other day. I was thinking, you know, at 46, I don't know about anybody else, but my breasts used to sit. When I lay down flat, my breasts used to stay on my chest and point to the sky. Now,
one of those days, mine are under my bloody armpits.
Now, yeah, when I lie down, I may as well be a little boy.
Yes.
I'm so flat.
That reminds me of the funny story when we were kids and someone tripped over mum's feet on the sunbed when we were on holiday and went, oh, sorry, son.
Yeah, I remember
she
that.
She sat up absolutely incensed, didn't she?
That was so funny.
But she was topless sunbathing in those.
And in those days, it was very cool to do that, wasn't it?
It was. Sorry, we digress.
I digress. So, yeah, so basically my breasts no longer stay on top of my chest when I lie down. They go towards, well, let's be honest, they go into my armpits. Yeah, they literally fall underneath. So I was thinking to myself, how on earth is he going to find symmetry there? You know,
whilst I'm
lying flat. Anyway,
can you just like tip me up?
That's what I thought. Are they going to tip me up while I'm asleep? I mean, will that happen? Or will he just know?
Oh, maybe they take pictures of
They do.
Oh, okay.
But even so.
Yeah, I get what
you're
saying.
How does he know?
Oh, let's do some nice symmetry here and make them both under her armpits.
Exactly.
Because you don't want to sit up after the surgery.
And one be there and the other one under my armpit. Anyway, potentially the least of my worries.
Absolutely,
but one of those things that I have thought about. So, so they basically then they reconnect all the blood supply, stitch you back up, and then you start healing and recovering. Now, that surgery is much more complex. It is full-on plastic surgery with a lumpectomy. So that one immediately appealed to me, I have to say, because, well, for lots of reasons, but primarily because once this is all over, and by this all over, I mean in its entirety, not just this surgery, but the potential of chemotherapy and everything that goes with it, I will know that I have been on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to see it every day standing in the front of the mirror when I probably don't think I will want to.
No, now, it's going to stay with you anyway.
It will stay with me anyway. Yeah. I don't need a battle scar if I can avoid it.
Yeah.
Now, clearly, I hope it's clearly, if there were no other choices and it had to be a mastectomy without reconstructive surgery, I'd be totally fine with that.
Yeah.
It would be hard, I think, living with that longer term once the trauma of this initial part is over. But I could do that.
I think it's very much a personal decision.
It's
very personal. I know you've spoken to me about it. You've spoken to Andrew. But actually,
if you are able to kind of fast forward, which you have done in your mind, yeah. to a place where you're healthy again and, yes. you know, touch wood, everything is okay, what do you want to see in the mirror? What, if you can? What,
absolutely.
If you've got a choice, what choice are you going to make? And at the moment, you've got that choice to make.
Absolutely. And I really do feel very lucky that I have got that choice. I know I keep banging on about feeling lucky, feeling grateful. It's not just... I'm not just saying those words. I genuinely feel like that.
Yeah.
Because I know it's so... It's not like this for everybody. It really isn't. And... But for me, it is. And it is my story. And I know that longer term, I won't want to look too dissimilar to how I look right now if it can be avoided. So
and,
I'm going
to
go...
And I think the other thing to think about as well is, if and when you get down that path and you hadn't made this decision and you looked and thought, do you know what, I'd really like to have them reconstructed, that's then another surgery, isn't
yeah,
it?
And I absolutely.
Think being so sure about it, because a lot of people aren't sure, are they? But knowing you, you've made your mind up and you are confident in that decision, otherwise you wouldn't have voiced it. And
I am, but I have to say, Heather, it's been so hard. Fast forward slightly to this Wednesday, which I went back in to see the surgeon again, and I did decide to go for the surgery I've just described, you know, with the perforator flap.
The cat flap
surgery. But, and I did know my own mind. When he told me the options, that was the one that immediately I knew I was sort of drawn towards. But having had sort of 10 days without any contact with the hospital and trying to decide the right type of surgery was really difficult, because there is a thing that I've not spoken about yet with regards to the lumpectomy that you do need to bear in mind. And this is in relation to what they call the margin. So for those of you that don't know, the margin is a mathematically chosen sort of mass that sits around your tumour that is hopefully going to show as cancer-free. So they take your tumour, then they take an extra bit, like a Russian doll, to make sure... There's my Russian doll. So that's how I will now think of it, as my Russian doll. So inside my second Russian doll, there shouldn't be any cancer cells. And that's how they hope to have got all of your tumour out of you surgically.
And do they come up with that measurement, if you like,
yeah.
based on the size of the tumour currently?
I think so, yeah. yes. I think it's a percentage. It wouldn't make any sense if it weren't a percentage,
no.
I don't think, because everyone is different.
Yes, I agree.
But I don't know how they calculate that. But anyway, it means with this third option... they can take a slightly more margin than they ordinarily would if they did the first two. Again, so a bit of a win. But unlike a mastectomy, where they will literally take your entire breast, leaving just the chest wall, so you're almost 100% certain to get rid of every physical trace of your cancer. Unlike with that, with a lumpectomy, when they do the histology report, they have to look at the margin, okay, and they have to check for cancerous cells or precancerous cells within this margin. Now, there is a 1 in 5 chance, so immediately I'm going, that's 20%. There was a one.
That's good maths.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you really need to.
Yeah.
So there is a 20% chance or 1 in 5 chance that they will find cancerous cells within that margin. Okay, so it doesn't happen very often, but still 1 in 5. And if that does happen, they don't just rely on the radiotherapy to sort it out. They will go back in and reoperate.
And is that after they've reconstructed?
Yes,
it? Can they not
it is.
Test while you're under
they cannot,
the knife?
No.
Oh, that's
yeah.
That's
so,
annoying.
But and I knew that was a risk that I was prepared to take when I made the decision to have this surgery, because
yeah.
for me, there's an 80% chance that it will be clear. So I have to work on that basis. And the other thing as well is that if they do have to go back in and take some more, I'd sooner do that and have a very similar looking breast if possible than any of the other options that are open to me.
And so if you were the 1 in 5 or the 20%,
yeah.
they would go back in and retake,
yes.
but would they? What would happen with the other parts of the surgery, the constructive parts
of the surgery? I didn't ask in great detail what actually does happen, but he said they would absolutely go back in, take more margin.
I wonder if, because the reconstruction is there already, that it wouldn't necessarily make potentially that much difference.
I don't know.
I guess it would all depend on the results and how much is in that margin, if anything.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. It sounds like, although, you know, there are risks, I think you...
Yeah, there are. But the other thing you need to bear in mind as well is that for me, with the type of cancer I have, the long-term outcome of surviving for the next 10 years, for me, is the same if I have a mastectomy or if I have a lumpectomy. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, this will make me laugh. When I was in my appointment, I asked him to find the algorithm that they use to put all the information into. I said, is it real? And can we do it together so I can see what my odds are? Because I wanted to know what my prognosis was.
I bet he can't wait to see you again. Just prove and show to me that you know what you're doing.
Well, before I finally decided that this was the surgery I wanted to have, I just needed it to be based on more than a gut feel. It had to be based in fact. It had.
Yeah. I know I'm going to say and, that, and it clearly is.
I sound like a COVID briefing now, but it had to be based on the science. It really did for me.
Well, science we'll come maths. To COVID in a minute. Actually.
We will. But I got him to show me the algorithm.
That was very interesting.
It was fascinating, yeah. And it showed me what my chances of being alive were in 10 years' time. And they were virtually, within less than a percentage point, exactly the same with either a mastectomy or a cat flap.
Good. So you're satisfied with that decision?
I am, yeah. There is still one anomaly, still the HER2 status.
Yeah, it's still not come back, has it?
No.
But from what I can gather from what you've said, even if the HER2 status would come back with the result that meant it was the cancer
more
was more
aggressive,
there's probably not much else they would do until the surgery.
That's correct, yeah. So actually, at my appointment on Wednesday, which was the 7th of December, I had to have almost decided what I wanted to do by then. And I had, but with a few questions. And obviously the need to look at this algorithm and have a look at the MRI and have a look at everything. So, yeah, you're right. I bet you think, oh, God, no.
You're like that child in the class who's like, me, can I answer? Can I come and see? Can I do the experiment?
Oh, that reminds me of being back in the gym. I obviously, as you know, go to the gym with my husband and your husband, and your husband has not stopped taking the mickey out of me for wanting to be the best, even with cancer, doing pull-ups with breast cancer. That has been non-stop.
You know what? If he were to treat you in any way differently, you'd feel left out and upset.
I would.
One thing we've forgotten to talk about, I suppose we haven't forgotten about it, but one of the reasons why it's been so long since we've recorded is because... you saying earlier you have quite small breasts and you're quite happy about that. I'd like to say that for the first time in your life, you've had a double C.
You've been dying to get that in, haven't you?
I've been dying to get it in. So you actually got COVID, didn't you, a couple of weeks ago?
No, not even a couple of weeks ago. I finally tested negative on Tuesday of this week.
Yes.
I got COVID. I went to, can you remember me telling you that I was going to the Maggie Oliver fundraising ball?
The ball, yeah, which you danced all night with your gorgeous husband and had a lovely time.
And it was awesome. We raised a lot of money for the charity, which was fantastic. But I woke up on the Sunday and thought, oh, I feel a bit flu-y, but I thought it
and
was...
And you can't even blame it on, you know, a few glasses of
bubbles
because you
are totally teetotal. So it wasn't that, but I thought it was because I've been on my little trotters dancing till 1:30 in the morning and singing my heart out.
And obviously because you're like nearly 50, that's quite... That would quite...
Not nearly 50.
Well, the other side of 45.
Yeah. Still not nearly 50. I'll tell you what did happen at the appointment on Wednesday. The consultant said, so when we were filling out the consent forms, you know, for the operation, he's like, so you're 56 and all that. I was like, no,
whoa.
Don't give me an extra 10 years. Well, do in life expectancy,
but not on age.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I can imagine that was a bit of a whoo.
It was. So
46.
But yeah, no, I woke up feeling really grotty, but just assumed it was this awful flu that everybody has got. Mm. I mean, continued throughout the week, not really thinking too much about it, just feeling awful. Went back to bed at one point and thought, this isn't me. And it was at that point I thought, I better just have a quick check because our mum, as you know, has to shield. So we have to be super careful around mum. And I didn't want to be around her without checking. So I did. And unfortunately, within seconds, it came back with a positive result. So I just thought to myself, what on earth is the universe doing to me? Cancer and COVID in 1 week.
When I spoke to mum that day, she said, I cannot believe that she's been so unlucky. And I said, I'm really glad.
Yes.
She went, what the hell? Yeah. And I said, well, listen to the rationale, because actually, one of our close friends, her surgery was postponed for weeks and weeks because she had COVID. This way, you've had it.
Yeah.
You've got antibodies.
Yes.
You're going to go into your surgery fit and healthy without a risk, hopefully, of getting it again and, you know, the treatment being either delayed or postponed in some way. So I actually think, do you know what? I'm really pleased that you've had it at this moment.
I agree. I totally agree. And I did feel rubbish, but no more rubbish than I felt the first time I had it. So it'd be, in my opinion, it was a good thing.
Excellent, good stuff. Well, I think we've had quite a long chat today.
We've
had a lot to get in, but thoughts and feelings for the coming weeks. Christmas is around the corner.
Yeah, Christmas is around the corner. I'm really excited because I think now I've got a plan. I mean, we still don't know about the chemotherapy. We won't know about that until either the HER2 comes back as positive, in which case it's definitely happening. If it comes back as negative, we still won't know until after we get the histology report back from the surgery. So, you know, I'm just going to go into Christmas with a heart full of joy and feeling really good, because I do feel good. I feel positive that we've got a plan. I'm very confident in my surgeon. I feel very I put it out on Facebook and on Instagram, the fact that I had a breast cancer diagnosis, because for me, I don't ever want this to be like the elephant in the room. And I know that my way of therapy, or my way of therapizing myself.
Love it. I don't even know whether that's a real word.
It can be now, therapizing. Is to talk and to create a bit of a debate and to just have it out there. So I did put it out there. The support that I've received has been absolutely phenomenal. I mean, to the point where it made me cry on a number of occasions, because so many people got in touch, like over 100 odd people got in touch, some of whom I haven't spoken to for a number of years. We've kept in touch via social media, but I haven't spoken to them, and they all either called or messaged. It was absolutely amazing. So I feel very loved, very supported, and I feel like waiting till the middle of January is okay, because at first I was really worried about an end of January timescale for surgery. But I spoke to the surgeon on Wednesday, and he's like, you know, a delay in treatment is months and months.
Yeah.
A few weeks is not a delay in treatment. But in my mind, having had such a gap between seeing them on the 25th of November and not then again until the 7th of December, it was really distressing, and my mind was doing overtime, and I wasn't sure whether, again, I could feel it growing, and it was just a head mess.
Yeah,
and it really was.
I know that this sounds like only somebody perhaps who's not gone through it could say this really without really knowing, but you've got to trust them.
Yes.
Because they know.
I do.
And I know people, unfortunately, I know people who have had a diagnosis and been in and had surgery within a week.
Yes.
And so they know when
absolutely
to act quickly.
And that is basically what he said. So after my appointment on Wednesday, I said to Andrew as we were leaving, I feel elated. I'm really pleased with where we're at. Happy he's doing it. Happy with what we've decided. And now, actually, I am going to just let myself fall off the edge of the cliff nicely.
In a good way.
In a
not
really
in like a
nice
Thelma and Louise way.
Not yet. Not that way. But you would be
with you by your
yeah,
side.
Yeah, you would. Uh-huh. But no, not in that way. Just in a, I'm going to just fall into their hands.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stop Googling, I'm going to stop researching, and I'm actually just going to have a nice few weeks distracting myself from thinking about breast cancer. And I'm going to enjoy Christmas. I'm just going to let go, which is quite difficult for me. But already, I'm on day three of letting go, and I'm enjoying it.
Well, if you believe that, you'll believe anything. If you like what you've heard, then please hit the subscribe button and give us a 5-star review. We'd be very, very grateful. In the meantime, I hope you have a really super Christmas, and we'll be in touch in the new year with more updates about the journey so far. All right, take care.